when I first left, it was just want to earn my wage. And maybe at the end of a month, I was kind of like, actually, I'm on for a 12-month projection of more than my wage already. So then I was thought, actually, I can do it. For me, it was, I'm earning more of a wage and probably working half the time. Working in other ways, so it was longer hours, but networking, things like that, but actually fulfilling client work. I was on a path to earn more than I was beforehand anyway. So at that point, it was kind of, well, I either start saying no to people or it's got to become more than this.
You're listening to the Bookkeepers Podcast, sponsored by Xero.
I use Xero's accounting and bookkeeping software to manage my clients' accounts, and I love it. If you haven't tried it yet, head over to Xero.com with an X, and you can either start a free 30-day trial or sign up to Xero's partner program to join their amazing community of forward-thinking accountants and bookkeepers.
Hi, and welcome to Bookkeepers Bootcamp. I'm Zoe Whitman. I'm here with Jo Wood, and we're joined by Hannah Simpson today. Hi, Hannah. How are you?
Hiya.
I'm good, thanks. You guys all right?
We are so good. We're so good. And we're really excited to have a chat with you. You were revealing to us before we started the recording that you knew when you started working with us that you were going to end up on the podcast one day. And here you are.
Well, yeah, it was my friend. She said it to be fair. Hi, Kate, for listening. She's like, you're going to be on the podcast. I'm like, no, nobody wants to hear about little old me. But here we are.
We do want to hear from you, Hannah. We really do, because Hannah has an amazing, amazing story that she's like, you're still right in the middle and the throes of, because you're young. And I think we're just fascinated by what you've done so far at your young age. So Hannah, why don't you start off by telling us about you and why you chose the path that you're on now?
So I live in Cardiff in South Wales. Never really knew I wanted to be an accountant. Always thought I wanted to be a teacher or in the police. But then I realised I'd have to do 2 years on the beat and thought I'm not fit enough for that. And my mum told me I would either need to go to university or get a job and pay rent. And I didn't want to pay rent, so I went to university. So I went and did accountancy, came out with my degree, and then I moved straight away into practice. I worked at one practice for 1 year, and then I moved on to another for four, where I did my ACCA. Due to unfortunate events within that practice, I moved up the kind of managerial hierarchy really quickly. So I got a lot of exposure to a lot of clients at a really young age. So that kind of just pushed my urge on a lot quicker than probably a lot of other people. And then I moved to another practice for 4 years based in Newport, where I moved into the accounts and audit manager role. So I took on kind of the responsibility for audit below the partner and things like that. So I was there for 4 years. So before I started by myself, I'd been in practice for 9 years already, basically fresh out of uni through to the day I left my previous employer. So yeah, September 22 was when I left, was my last day. And yeah, been going since then.
Wow, so you've been in practice for a year and a half-ish on your own. Tell us about what was your motivation to start your own practice?
So there was a few things, really. Kind of just always had an urge to do it for myself. And then I kind of had a couple of people in my ear being like, why are you just not doing it for yourself? Why are you doing it for other people? You're taking on a lot of responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. And then, yeah, I just thought, do you know what? I've got no responsibilities, quite frankly. We have a mortgage, but I'm very fortunate. My husband's got a very good job. So if I don't do it now, I'm probably going to have to wait until I'm a lot older to jump ship, or when I kind of just need to do it for myself. So, yeah, I kind of thought, do you know what? We were away in the Maldives at the time. We've got this thing, me and my husband, we make really stupid life, well, not stupid, significant life decisions when we're on holiday. I left my last job when I was in South Africa on holiday. I left this job when I was in the Maldives. So it's kind of a reoccurring pattern for us. We make significant life choices on holiday. And he just said, just do it. So yeah, I left my job. I worked 3 months notice right up to the end. Yeah, and so that's that.
You know, I think having that breathing space, when we're self-employed, And I know you made these decisions before you were self-employed, but there is something about how when you're self-employed, you can just work and work and work because there's no one saying you've got to take your holiday allowance. And I think we give ourselves a really rough ride. Like, we're not very nice bosses to ourselves a lot of the time. So that's maybe a lesson for today. Everyone book some holiday. But also, I think that that just demonstrates how giving yourself the downtime, excuse me, to like think things through and let that ideas percolate and speak to people about or speak to your partner about ideas, why it's so important, because otherwise we just get stuck in a sort of hamster wheel, don't we, and we don't really sort of step back and look at the situation and what we really want.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't get me wrong, holidays now look very different now you're obviously self-employed, but I think it's something that I'm really working towards, getting downtime, because like you say, stepping away, it gives you time to reflect and just boost your ideas more than anything, because you're not thinking about day-to-day things. So
have you always been, so I think when we grow up and thinking about your background and thinking about like university and then working in, I remember being young and working in practice and saying to the girl that sat opposite me, like, oh, let's do this on our own. Let's get out of here. Let's. I always knew I was going to be self-employed one day because everyone wound me up and I was like, oh my goodness, they're so stupid. And it's that entrepreneurial myth that we go through that we think because we're doing the job that we can do run the business. And obviously there's a much bigger thing going on there. But I think to be entrepreneurial, you have to sit there and look at people and think, oh my goodness, I can't do this. Was it like that for you, or was it when you was on that holiday, you know, you made that big choice, or was it always like, did you always have a seed, and was that, are there people in your family that were self-employed, or where's that come from?
So my dad was self-employed years and years ago, so kind of growing up until he became a teacher, I kind of always seen that work ethic. Like school holidays, we would go to work with him, and he's a painter and decorator, so I'd be there stripping the wallpaper off the like the walls in my school holidays, earning a couple of quid so I can buy some sweets. So, I mean, my dad was self-employed, so kind of had that seed very young. But other than that, not really. Like a lot, I don't know, it's kind of just, when I was in my first big role, I kind of thought, you know what, I could do this for myself, but I'm not quite ready. And then when I moved into my second role, for a while that seed was planted and I was very content and I was happy where I was. And then I think the more I progressed and the more kind of little niggly things that kind of happen as you've been at a job for a while. And I was like, well, what's my next move? Do I stay? Do I say I want to be a partner? Do I say to them, I'm going to go elsewhere, or do I just go on my own? And I did say to my previous employers, had you asked me this question 2 years ago, I would have wanted to be a partner. But I suppose things change, and I would look at a business and go, do you know what, if that was mine, I wouldn't quite run it that way. So in the back of my mind, even though I was within a business, I had those seeds that were maybe like, well, if it was me, I wouldn't do that, or I would do this. And so I think it's always been in the back of my mind somewhere. That seed grows and that seed goes back in, and you kind of just, it sits dormant for a while. But I just got to a point that I was like, do you know what, it's kind of probably now or never. So
yeah, I love that push. I think a lot of people we speak to, something has happened, and it's a really important piece of work to do on yourself to think like, what do I think the future looks like for me? You know, what direction am I heading? Because you start having conversations with people, or you start even just having those thoughts of, if this was my own business, would I do it this way, or would I do something else? Like, if you weren't even like playing with that idea, you wouldn't have been having those thoughts. So
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So you started the practice about 18 months ago. And the question everyone's going to be asked, there are lots of questions. Was it easy to start a practice? And how did you find your first clients?
So no is the answer. It wasn't easy at all. I thought it was like you say, oh, it's all right. It's an accountancy practice. I've been doing it for 9 years. No, what I've been doing was my job for 9 years, being an accountant, which you can be a very good accountant, but not a great business person. And that's something that they don't really teach you in however long you train to be an accountant, is actually how to be a business person. So no, it wasn't easy at all. But you kind of just go with the flow. And I think if you put yourself around the right people, you will learn very quickly the do's and the don'ts and the rights and the wrongs and where you need to go with it. And I think governing boards are really important because they do give you some sort of guidance on how to do things, checklists, yes or no, to get you at least the basics you need to know and the basic things you need to have for a practice. So I think that's really important. My first client, well, actually, I had a couple of clients before I even went out on my own, kind of just family, friends and things like that. So my old employer knew that I had a couple on the side. They were very supportive and they were okay with that because they would not have, they were not a conflict of interest. They weren't, kind of wouldn't have been a client with anyone but me. So I left my job and kind of thought, you know what? I've probably got a couple of hundred quid a month. Fine. That's that. I'll go and work really hard, and kind of coming away with nothing other than maybe a couple of hundred quid kind of spurs you on a lot, because going from a paid accountant's role to walking away to nothing, you kind of go, ooh, I'm losing a bit of disposable income here. And your lifestyle can drastically change from that. So you either kind of go, I'll live without, or you go, I don't want to live without. I'm going to work really hard to get there. To essentially, I just wanted to pay my wage. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted to earn enough money to pay my wage. And I think I surrounded myself with really good people. I went networking, things that I'd never really done before, things massively outside my comfort zone. I'm quite an introverted person. I'm the one out of all my friendship group. I will just sit there silently and make really sarcastic comments and really passive jokes, but I am more than happy to sit there silently. So things like that were really outside of my comfort zone, but I went and did it. And actually I found really good supportive people. And I found there were certain people in my network that the minute they knew I was self-employed, they really pushed me to people they knew who could help me. So I was very lucky. My father-in-law, he is a trained accountant, but he owned his own business. He knew a partner in another accountancy practice in South Wales. And I had a chat with that partner and he went, you know what, if you've got a bit of spare capacity, do you want to come and help me for a bit? Oh yeah, that's great. And actually through that, I've had some really big clients because they can't service them. So I think for me, networking and getting to know people and just saying yes. I mean, you do need to learn to say no, but saying yes to opportunities that they might not be long-term, but actually if in the short term, they're going to help you, I think it's really important. And just opening yourself up to those kind of networks.
Mm. Did you feel, Hannah, that people like your friendship group, did they understand what you did and what kind of service you were offering?
No, I'm the kind of person, I don't really broadcast what I do. Like some of my friendship groups, their partners are accountants and they more than know what I do because they do it day to day. They ask me how you're getting on, blah, blah, blah. But I'm quite a reserved person. So if someone says to me, how's the business going? My first response is, oh yes, good, thank you. That's it. That's as far as I kind of go. And it's really funny because I was at Fab last week and Rachel Harris and Lucy Cohen said they see their friends just go, oh, when all you say is, oh yeah, it's fine, thanks. But I've got a couple of really, really supportive friends that have been really lucky. They have kind of gone to me on the weekends, oh, do you need help? Like they work full time themselves. But if there's something they can help me with, they will. They'll work their weekends to help me if I need it. So I've got a really good supportive network. But to be honest, the majority of my friends probably don't even know what I actually do.
No, I think we're all Chandler Bings in our own way. And people don't. And that's what, I mean, we shared our documentary, mini documentary yesterday, because we have to explain it all the time. And it's like, how do you put it in a way so that more people explain why you do what you do? Hannah, yeah. It sounds like, I know you feel like you're not, you know, you're happy to be introverted, but you've really pushed yourself out there. And you obviously, the first goal sounds like you were trying to replace the income that you had from the job, you know, and I think that is mainly the goal most of us have.
Yeah.
But knowing you and working with you, you have got bigger goals than that now. And you're so early in your journey, but what happened? What made you think, hold on, like, it's not about just replacing the income and staying where I am. I've got big goals. Was there something that happened like that? Or was it a belief or a confidence in yourself? Or did a client come on and you thought, whoa, what's going on here? Like, what do you remember when that happened?
It was a mix of everything. I think when I first left, it was just want to earn my wage. And maybe at the end of a month, 6 weeks, I was kind of like, actually, I'm on for a 12-month projection of more than my wage already. So then I was thought, actually, I can do it. And for me, it was, I'm earning more of a wage and probably working half the time. Working in other ways, so it was longer hours, but networking, things like that. But actually fulfilling client work, I was on a path to earn more than I was beforehand anyway. And then it got to the point where I was kind of, I'd say maybe a year in, and I was working a lot because I could see that the motivation had grown. I didn't want to say no to people because I was being referred to really good clients, and not through kind of, I'm not great at social media, it's something I really need to work on, but my biggest referral for me and getting clients have been my clients. They have referred me on to other people. And actually, these are people who I really want to work with because they either want to grow or they're really nice people or things like that. So I was kind of drawing attention to clients that I wanted to work with. And then I thought, well, actually, this is now more than paying my wage. And at that point, it was, well, I either stop here because I can't carry on working 60, 70 hours a week. It wasn't good for me. It's not great when you've got a husband who works full time, but can come home. I'm still on the sofa working. And I'd lost like my work-life balance, which I really valued. So at that point it was kind of, well, I either start saying no to people or it's got to become more than this now. So I kind of just said, well, for me, stopping and saying no isn't really an option. I carried on going. And then
did you bring someone into the team, Hannah? Please tell us that you have.
So August 23, I took on Olivia. I know there's a lot of thing about hiring your friends and people who you trust and things like that, because it can work out badly. But for me, I was trying to navigate this growing a business, not 100% sure still where I was going with that, but I needed someone who could come in, could trust me and kind of just go, sit down and do what you're good at doing because other people can help you with other things. So I took on someone who I previously worked with, Olivia, and she's been a saving grace to me. She took on all my payrolls, all the CIS returns, which nobody trained you to do as an accountant, by the way. Payroll people are a savior. and they're certainly worth their weight in gold. I took on her and she kind of took a lot of weight off me of things that I wasn't sure of. I was always reluctant to give stuff away, but actually she kind of just picked it up and went, this is mine now, you're not even touching it. So that worked out perfectly for me. And yeah, so the two of us had been navigating along kind of, she has been one of my biggest cheerleaders. Nothing is ever too much for her. And I think employees like that are fantastic because I'll go, oh, we've got this client. And she's like, right, this is this. I can help you with this. I can help you with this. So I think having two of us has really kind of muddled along and navigated ourselves even in a better direction. So she came on board August 23.
How did you feel, Hannah, about, the paying the salary of someone who you clearly care about as a friend? And I guess she wasn't like the cheapest member of staff you could bring into your team. So, you know, how did you like decide, do I go with like, do I bring a trainee in? Do I bring in like someone who's senior? Like why was it that you went that way?
So no, she certainly wasn't the cheapest member of staff, but actually she's the best money I have spent to date, because actually she, even though she was predominantly payroll, she was willing to learn and help me. And some people go, oh no, admin is beyond me. Whereas she is like, you're not doing that. I am doing that. Tell me exactly what I need to do. So although I could have gone for someone cheaper and probably their skill set was completely different, she was not only what I needed, but has navigated herself into what I need, which is really helpful. I always think she will always get paid before I will. And I think as a business owner, if you've got employees, you have to accept that. And I tell the same thing to my clients when sometimes they moan at me. I'm like, but that's your responsibility as an employer. They will always get paid before you. But that makes you work even harder, I think, to make sure that actually you don't want to give up your wage. So you work even harder to make sure they and you were paid every month.
I've just seen that Nick Lonsdale said, Hannah, I'm loving your story. I'm hooked. And this is this is so important to share, because no one knows what's ahead. And I remember I liken it to when I was having my first baby. I was hooked onto a channel called Discovery Home and Health. And it just was basically watching women be pregnant and through their final stage, because I just wanted to take it all in and go, well, what's it look like? Well, they're a different family, but what does that look like? Or how do they deal with that? And then when I had children, it was like super nanny. And it's like going into people's and just seeing what it's like for different people at different stages. And I can imagine that if I was at the beginning of my bookkeeping journey or my practice journey, it's just so like, oh, how are you doing that? What are you doing? Oh, you've done that quickly. And it's just like, we just love to be nosy. So Hannah, thank you so much for sharing, because it's so important.
Even if it helps one person, that's great.
I can imagine Nick is tuned. Nick's early in her journey, and she's just one of those like superstars, and she's just going to be like, right, tell me everything. I love it. I know Hannah. So despite only being in practice for 18 months, you were growing fast, and you're getting lots of referrals from great like clients who are great, who are bringing you more clients who are great. You've decided to take action to grow your practice. Tell us about what's happened recently.
So I acquired a practice a couple of months ago. So when I first went on my own, I kind of was like, oh, well, how do I do this now? I either organically grow, I wasn't sure how long that would take, or I buy a practice. Yeah, great. Actually, going out to an agent as a newly self-employed person and saying, I want to buy a practice, they laugh in your face. And I was like, oh, right, okay. And they said to me, well, how do you think, because obviously kind of the conditions work that you buy, and if clients leave, they get a claw back and stuff like that. How do you think a person's going to sell if you've got absolutely no experience running a business? And I was like, oh, actually, I didn't really think about that. All I thought was, yeah, I'm a great accountant. Surely I can run a practice. I didn't think about anything else. So I said, all right, okay. And he said to me then, he said, if you can prove to a practice that you can run a business, they will sell you their business. But until you do that point, they won't sell you a business. I was like, oh, right, okay then. I was like, well, I got no other option but to organically grow then, have I? Kind of took the option away from me. But that agent kept in touch with me, and every so often he would see how I was doing and stuff. And then he actually, a practice came on sale in Pontypridd, which is just up the road from us, but it's actually a completely different area to Cardiff anyway, and not an area that I'd operated in before. And he said, oh, it's a gentleman who's looking to retire, but he wants to stay on, but his practice is a relative size to the one you're running now, to a practice owner and an employee. His employee was doing a very similar role to the same one Liv, my employee, was doing. But there's an opportunity. So I thought, oh, great, I'll go and have a chat with him. And I went to have a chat with him, and he was a lovely man, really lovely. And he was looking to basically sell to someone who would look after his clients. So the more we chatted, the more we realised kind of our ethics were really aligned, the things we wanted to do. I could push his clients along, which maybe he wasn't as confident in doing, kind of bringing them digital. Making tax digital other than bridging software, encouraging them to do things that maybe weren't the bare minimum for compliance. The more we chatted on and off for weeks about how maybe this would work, how this would work. He wanted to stay on, which actually was music to my ears, because not only for the handover process, but I had no capacity to take on a client base to any form of tax returns, because I'm the one who does the compliance stuff. I had no capacity to take on his compliance stuff. So actually, if we could get it to a position that we were essentially doing the same similar roles, the people below us, we could muddle their work around a bit. So Rian, our other employee, she's fantastic at kind of the bookkeeping, the VAT returns and the account side of it, whereas Olivia's preference is the payroll side of it. So I thought, well, we can take payroll off Rian and we can move things around a bit and it'll streamline it a bit. So we went ahead with the deal. So November, we kind of merged it all together. It's not been easy. It's not a walk in the park, especially we're very digitalized. And being a very new business, the one thing I regret is I never put any processes in place. So if somebody was going to tell me, if you went back and did one thing, one, I'd write it down, and two, I'd actually put some processes in place. It's not that they weren't processes, they lived in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no one uniform process either.
Yeah, it's so common. And yeah. Hence why when I started my fifth practice, I wrote down the startup program. I wrote down the 6-month success program. And that was kind of the, how am I doing this? How am I doing that? And it wasn't just the operational processes. It was the business processes. Because right. when you start a business for the fifth time, you realize that you start multiple businesses. And this is not maybe going to be the last time you ever do it. And so that you should write down what you need to do. Because yeah. You are obviously very systemized, but you are the best person. If you're the best person in the business, you're the best person to write the processes, but you're also the one that's the busiest when you're building, because you're doing everything. So you do need to start getting it out. And I just want to congratulate you on something, because I was listening to Stephen Bartlett's Diary of a CEO with Daniel Priestley, and they actually said, like, one of the best ways to grow is to acquire a business where a business owner wants to leave, wants to retire, but they're not digitally, you know, empowered. They are working maybe in a time a bit more of a traditional way. They've not, you know, embraced that. And you can go in and help them do that and then buy them out as they, like, reduce their time and everything. And you have literally, as someone 18 months into their journey, have done exactly what Stephen Bartley and Daniel Priestley have said to do, like, is a great way of doing. I mean, I'm just like, it's so forward thinking. You should be so mega proud of yourself. And I know it's not easy, and I know it's going to be, you know, there's lots of learnings, but you're also open to that learnings. You're working with us as well in our mastermind, and we know that there's, like, a pricing journey and a processes and systems journey. But what you are doing is you've got clients, like, you've got a load of clients right now, and they're happy because they're referring you. So there are lots of boxes that are, and is this a, could you keep doing what you're doing now without systems, processes, all of those? No, you can't. You can't keep growing in this way on a bit of a wing and a prayer. You can't do that.
No.
But you know that, and you're like, right, now let's slow it down. We know, the thing is, Zoe always says this, that you can't unlearn what you've learned in business. The fact you had that conversation with that guy without any knowledge about how you acquire business, and he, like, laughed at you, but then eventually he has helped you seal a deal. You can't unlearn that process. So that's forever your knowledge. Mm. But there are other things that you, like, the things you already know, you just got to go back a step and really implement them so that you can grow. And where are you on your recruitment journey at the moment? Because I know we've spoken about you, like, potentially taking on more people in your team.
Yeah, so unfortunately we had recently, we it was my first real recruitment kind of bummer. We were preparing for someone to come on board, and then unfortunately they had to withdraw literally with a couple of days notice before they were due to start. And then I think I kind of just went into not panic mode, because I'm quite chilled and just I'll get on with it. It lands on my head if someone else can't help me, and I just accept that. But I kind of thought, I don't know. I've got to a point where I'm like, I know I need to do it, but I don't know what my next step is. Maybe it was done for a reason. Maybe that wasn't the role I needed fulfilling. Maybe it's something else. But I think it's kind of made me step back and go, well, actually, okay, what work was I going to give the new employee? Can we navigate this between ourselves now? Where we are starting to shuffle work around. Maybe we can navigate between ourselves and do a bit of, give someone a bit more of that client, give someone a bit more of that client. So it's hard. Recruitment is really hard. And I, hats off to people, because before I'd be like, oh, you're obviously just not offering enough money. We offered good money and they still said no. So I was kind of, it's a work in progress, recruitment. We need admin. We need a bookkeeper. But again, it's kind of, you've got to do that, and you've got to make sure all your pricing's right, because you can't hire those people until all your pricing's right to allow you to pay their wages. So we're still navigating it all, to be honest. It's a really roller coaster of a journey. So yeah, we were due to have someone start at the beginning of March. We still haven't got anyone yet. But actually, it's just, it's me. I am the bottleneck. And also, I cannot bear the thought of having to sit through another round of interviews.
Oh, Hannah, can I ask, what does your day look like at the moment as a, like, the CEO of your business, not just the accountant? What do you do day to day at the moment?
So literally no day is the same for me, but quite often I get up about 6:30-ish, have a cup of coffee, I'll start work straight away. I've started trying to do emails and just practice stuff in the morning, AMLs, letter of engagements. That job for me is either a 6:30 job or a 7:30 PM job in the night. So I do that. And then quite often, I think you guys have really helped me with this. I was traveling a lot, wasting a lot of downtime. So I'm cutting that out slowly but surely. But it's quite often it's meeting, maybe another meeting, maybe do some work, actual client work. But the thing is, I end up doing the low value work, which really I shouldn't be doing. But at the moment, we've got no one else to do it. But in the hindsight, I really enjoy it as well. That's kind of it. But I'm not going to say it's a short day. I used to work 8 till 4. Now I work 6:30, quite often till 9:30 PM. I will stop to go to the gym or do some sort of exercise and have dinner, but it's a long day. It's a long old day.
I really thought you were going to say, I stopped to go to the toilet. I'm like, well, I hope so.
Cup of coffee in a wee.
So Hannah, this is exactly what we're working on with you. And we started off with like making sure AML, and that's, you know, because that needs to be sorted. And then it's repricing clients so that we can bring you in some support. Yeah. And therefore claim your time back. I would also like to say, I feel that you do work long days, but you also, since we've been working together, you do have time out and go and have a break. And then you're fully present when you're trying to have a break and get away from home and have a few days away. But you also have got big goals and you know exactly why you're doing this. And I can see that even though it's been tough and it's hard, there's quite a clear path on how we get you sorted. And it's time, consistency, but also not burning out along the way. That is the difficult thing, I think, when you're in this kind of zone, because you're young, you've got all this energy, and but we need to protect it and make sure that we're doing the hard work, the tough work, the fun work. Sometimes I know, because we are all geeks, sometimes we just love getting ourselves into a spreadsheet, doing a computation, working out what's going on. That doesn't balance, or let me just spend. We're working,
yeah,
but we're not doing the work that we need to do. And I think that's when you are able to do the operations in the business, you give yourself a break. You're like, but I've been working all day. I've been working hard all day. It's not the work we need to do. We need to do the tough stuff. We need to do the repricing. We need to write those systems and processes. We need to do the recruitment and the training. And maybe those bits aren't the bits that fire us up and light us up and get us excited. But once you do it, the beauty of that is once you've done that work, you won't have to do it again. You might have to tweak it, but you can bring people in that pick it up and do it. So it's changing. You're very much in that transit. You know how to grow a business. You've got those skills. Other people get stuck there and they're like, I've got all the operation skills, or I've got my processes and things already, but I've got no clients. It's always one or the other. And everyone that's sitting on one side of the fence wants to be on the other side of the fence until you're there. And then the grass is greener again.
Yeah, I really agree.
Oh, goodness. Hannah, I think people have been really encouraged by what you have said. I think they're very wowed with your conviction and progress, determination. You're really inspiring because you make it sound easy, though it's not. And that's the thing, isn't it? The Instagram reel, the highlights make it look easy. But I think you've been really open and honest. You've said how long and hard you're working. But I also know you are really good at making sure you have time for your sports, time for the gym. You make sure you do that stuff too, which other people go, well, that's hard. Just sit down and have a cup of tea and don't move. But no, you like to do that as well. So that will help with your burnout, because you do have a release, you do go and enjoy yourself and play sports and things. So that's great. If someone's was about to, if there's someone's working as an accountant, now obviously you're ACCA, am I right? And you, yeah, so you had your, you were able to start an accountancy practice with ACCA. But some people might choose to, they might be an accountant by training, but choose a bookkeeping business to start up or whatever kind of practice, but maybe they're in that job and they're about to make that leap. You're 18 months in. What would you tell them? Because you've said about the systems and processes. What should they be focusing on and thinking about once they've kind of started to cover the bills and feel like, okay, you know, or would you do, how would you do it day one? What would you do?
I would say never say no to help from the start. Like my mum used to sit at my table and do my admin for me the day I started. So never be afraid to say no to help. Network, like grow your network. And even if it's not for the purpose of building clients, grow your network, because they're the people you will need to rely on. So many of my clients come to me now and say, oh, you know, a mortgage advisor, you know, a financial advisor, you know, so-and-so, can you send them to me, please? You become like a pillar of the community for your clients. And that's really helped me as well, kind of build up an even better relationship with my clients, which just has led to more work, grant funding, things like that. So being that pillar for them, they can rely on you. Get your systems and processes in place. And one thing I think people are really scared of is working with other people. Actually, that's one of the best things I've done. Whereas I worked before, you would never work with other accountants and other bookkeepers. They were always direct competition for you. But actually, the people I now work with, the communities I've joined, the six figure, actually, these are the people I now really rely on. And they're the people you can just voice note at 10 p.m. and go, this isn't for now, but by the way, blah, 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 blah. And then that's that. So I think don't be afraid to reach out. And I think people don't like being seen as vulnerable, because you're meant to be really good at your job. If you're a business owner, you're really good at your job. But actually, like you guys, I turn around and go, I don't want to be seen. Like, not that I don't want to be seen, but I'm not comfortable posting all about myself. I am an open book. Everyone, all my clients know everything about my life. Like, literally. But I don't post it on social media. It's probably something I could really easily do, but I just don't have the confidence to do that. So I think having the confidence to put yourself out there is another thing as well. What are people going to do? What's the worst people going to say? I still don't do it, though. I'm a hypocrite.
You do it in different ways. So like my view of you, Hannah, is you're like, you're really into team sports. And I see you in that situation, although you said, you know, you like to sort of sit quietly on your own in that sort of environment, you're part of a team and you see the value of being in a community and the value of having people with different strengths. So it's almost like naturally ingrained in you that you would use the strengths of other people. It's just you've turned that into business, and like maybe that's something that we can all remember, like even if we think we're not good at something, we'll do it in an environment that we're comfortable with. It's just finding your own way, isn't it? You don't have to do social media. That doesn't, and it clearly you've worked really well locally, so like that is brilliant for you. It's just, do you want your business to go national? Do you want to start having clients all over the place? If you do, then that might, like, how do you reach that's all.
Yeah, and I think it's having the ability to know you're not going to know everything. I think people think, oh my god, she's an accountant, she knows everything. There's so many things I don't know, but there's so many people who I know who know those answers. Or you pay for a helpline, kind of, they're the things that you look to when you build a practice. I have so many friends who I kind of go, I've worked with previously, and go, can you tell me, I'm not being stupid, but this is what I think. And they go, oh, well, yes, but actually you could do X, Y, Z. So I think it's as well knowing and accepting that you're not going to know everything. Whereas I think when you work for other people, you kind of go, oh, I've got a boss I can ask the questions to. They'll know the answers. It's so, yeah.
Oh, look, Hannah, thank you so much for chatting to us today. We've loved learning about your practice. How can people connect with you and find out more about what you do?
So, I mean, I am on LinkedIn. I am trying to be more active. We are on Instagram as well. So it's a work in progress. So I'm more than happy to connect with you all if you pop me a connection on LinkedIn. But also, if you've got any questions, please fire them away. I was that person who had to ask the questions to a lot of people who I didn't know. So please, if you've got any questions, whether it's, I don't know, how you apply for your practicing certificate, what do you need? I think there's a lot of opportunity there just to speak to someone else who knows or who's working through it as well. So yeah, if you've got any questions, drop me a message.
Thanks, Hannah. That's amazing. And thanks everyone for being here. And we're going to be back this evening at 8 o'clock in the Six Figure Bookkeepers Club. We're going to be talking to you about finding your ideal client. So come and join us later on. Okay. See you later.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for the Bookkeepers Podcast. Why not join us in the Six Figure Bookkeepers Club at sixfigurebookkeeper.club or visit our website, sixfigurebookkeeper.com.